Welcome to this episode of Sass and Sips, where every episode we discuss and dissect an episode of Lost in Order. We are your hosts. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Agnes.
And today's episode is not in Portland.
It's not that you're going to say not important.
Actually, I think it was an important episode, but that's beside the point. Anyway, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking mommy coffee. Or grandmommy coffee.
Yeah. I almost had myself a cup of that today. I have just seltzer and my peach orange blossom vodka in it, and it's so good. But yeah, it's like a perfect summer drink, even though it's butt-ass cold. I guess I'm pretending.
Butt-ass cold. Okay, let me just tell you, like, it's so cold out. Like, right now, our wind chill is, like, negative 10, and that's warm. We've had so much snow that it's blocking any air through the windows. So it's like the igloo effect. So the snow is so high, it's blocking air coming through. So
I guess be thankful for, you know, small miracles. But snow, today it's actually warm here. You know, it's in the 40s. Ugh, I'm so over
it. I hate you.
Yeah, I know. Move to Wisconsin. The weather is not that much different. Yeah.
First of all, really, one, it's not. Second of all, it's snowing in Mississippi and Texas. So it has nothing to do with us.
And like, yet,
when Mississippi is getting 6 inches of snow, that's a problem.
Texas is in a deep freeze, and here I am on
it's just not Wisconsin.
I'm in the Northeast, and I'm in the 40s today, and all the snow outside is melting. But yeah, sure.
So it's not like it's Wisconsin, it's crazy cold. The whole world's going to hell in a handbasket.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Day after tomorrow, in effect.
I know.
And they always play that. They always air that movie at the worst time, like when the weather sucks balls.
That's because everybody's stuck inside, so they're going to watch it.
And then everyone's calling the doctor for prescriptions of lorazepam because anxiety is sky high. Awesome.
Okay, so the episode. Overall, how'd you like it?
It was okay.
All right.
It was okay. That's high praise, considering I hate the show.
Yeah, I know. I guess that's all that I could really ask for, right? All right. You ready to just jump in, I guess?
I did have an epiphany.
Ooh.
I did have an epiphany at the beginning of the episode. Mm-hmm. And at the end, I was like, yes, I was right. Okay, but yeah.
Do you want to talk about it now?
No. You'll find out when you get to it. You know I am a tease.
I know. So tease me, baby.
As you go with the synopsis, I'll just poke in.
No, fine. In flashback, Juliet sits on a beach, crying as the sun sets over the water. Heading inside a bleakly lit corridor, she passes Ethan, who says hello. Inside, Juliet finds a woman sleeping. Using a zippered kit, she removes a syringe and fills it with the substance. The woman awakes, and Juliet discusses treating her, not because she is her doctor, but because she is her sister. She injects Rachel with the substance. In that flashback opening scene, because that's the opening of the show, so you don't even realize that it's a flashback.
Right. You don't realize it until she opens up the curtain windows.
Right, because she's sitting on a beach. She passes Ethan. The hallway kind of resembles the way we've seen the Hydra. And then you're like, oh shit, she's not on the island. Juliet sneaks into the Miami Central University Medical Research Laboratory after hours. She gets a call from Diana, a secretary at Middelos, regarding Dr. Burke's appointment to see Dr. Alpert. Inside the lab room, Juliet pockets several bottles of the medicine she previously used on her sister and is interrupted by a man and a woman entering the room, flirting and caressing each other. Juliet hides, but her cell phone rings, giving her away. The man moves over, and after Juliet makes up a story as to why she is there, he introduces Sherry to Juliet Burke, his ex-wife. He asks Juliet to leave and smugly asks her to turn the lights off. The next day at work, Juliet studies genetic data on her computer, but is interrupted by Sherry, who, besides being involved with her ex, is now a research assistant. She asks Juliet to report to Dr. Edmund Burke immediately in his office. Edmund reveals that he is fully aware.
So I don't know when's the right time to say the beginning of my epiphany, because we kind of bypassed it. So I'm like, do I say it now?
Sorry.
Or wait? Anyway. So, no, I didn't know the right time. I couldn't figure it out. So when she's with her sister and she's talking to her sister, you know, we don't have to do this. And the sister says, well, because it's not working or because you don't want him to know. So for some reason, and I really didn't know who the him was, because with loss, you don't know what the fuck is going on.
Well, and I think that was another reason.
We had a conversation.
Sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I was just going to say that's another reason, like, it makes you think that you're on the island, because the him has always kind of been referring to Ben.
Yeah, usually. Remember last week you asked me about this, like, what you think she was kind of rushing to kill him? Like, what was the rush? If he's dying, why have... So I thought about it. So she's like, it's just him. And I'm like, oh, she wants to leave because of revenge. And I'm like, is it because of Ben? Is it something else? But it's revenge. That's why she's rushing.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
But, and I'll tell you when I'll tell you the part two of that epiphany when we get to the end of the synopsis.
Okay. Edmund reveals that he is fully aware of what she has been doing and suspects that the patient is her sister. He wants to collaborate as her findings could change the face of medical science, making both of them rich. He points out that the alternative is ethical and even legal scrutiny. Juliet attends her meeting with Richard Alpert from Middelos Bioscience. He presents a slideshow about their facilities in Portland, Oregon, in the hope of recruiting her as head of the department. His pitch of independent funding and research freedom intrigues Juliet, who asks why they are interested in her. Alpert talks about Juliet's research, specifically the fact that she managed to impregnate a male field mouse. He is clearly impressed with her work. He asks her to examine a slide of a womb CT sequence. Juliet assesses that it is a human womb, and judging by the scan, most likely of a barren patient in her 70s. Alpert tells her that the woman is in fact just 26 years old, and that she could find out more if she worked with them. However, Juliet begins to cry, stating that her ex-husband would never let her go, and short of him getting hit by a bus, she was bound to him. Apologizing, she leaves, adding that she is no leader. Back at home, Juliet tells her sister about the interview and her confusion as her experiment is a failure, but is shocked to learn that it has not failed as Rachel has discovered that she is pregnant. Rachel has the box and instructions for Widmore home pregnancy test on the table, with the resolve that she must do, that all she must do now is get healthy again. Rachel and Juliet embrace and talk about confronting Edmund. The next day, Juliet finds Edmund talking to his mother brutally on his cell phone outside the lab. She tells him that Rachel is pregnant, but refuses to allow collaboration and publication of her breakthrough with her sister. As Edmund argues, he carelessly steps out onto the street and is hit by a bus.
That was funny. I laughed at that part.
Juliet goes to the morgue to identify Edmund's body and sign paperwork. The doctor leaves her alone and she cries. She is interrupted by Richard Alpert and Ethan Rom. She half recognizes Ethan, and she suddenly recalls her comment to Alpert about Edmund getting hit by a bus. Alpert says he doesn't remember that, and Juliet must still be in shock. She cannot blame herself for that tragic accident. He knows about her sister's pregnancy because of their very thorough recruitment process and asks once more for Juliet to join their research, just for 6 months. Juliet asks whether she can bring her sister, but Alpert admits it may be difficult for her to get treatment on such a remote facility, as it is in fact not quite in Portland. So does any of your epiphany have to do with the flashbacks?
No. Like the first part, but at the end it was on island scene.
Hey guys, we are here with an update to our scheduling. We just wanted to let you guys know that from Memorial Day to Labor Day, we are going to be going back to every other week publishing schedule. Okay, say something witty here.
Witty, because actually as you're talking, because you kind of, I don't know if this is witty or not, but you're sounding very sex kitten when you said hello. You, I was like, oh.
Agnes is at a loss for words, apparently.
I know, it doesn't happen.
This is like a 30-second promo, and you don't have words. But okay, the point is, from Memorial Day to Labor Day, we're going to release our regularly scheduled Lost episodes every other Monday. MAPS will still be every 2 weeks, and Spotlight will still be the first of the month. And then after Labor Day, we will go back to Lost being put out every week, just so that we can be able to spend a little bit more time with our families and enjoy the summer. So that's it. That was the update. Okay, on Hydra Island. In the Hydra surgery room, Jack uses the walkie to tell Kate to leave the island with Sawyer and contact him when she's safe with the story he told her when they first met. Kate and Sawyer attack and knock out Pickett and Jason, and Sawyer smashes Pickett's head against the food button. They lock the others inside the cages and escape. In surgery, Juliet calls Jack's bluff and instructs Ivan to get Danny and recapture Austin and Ford, authorizing them to kill if necessary. Juliet tells Jack that they can't escape because they are on a separate island. Jack is furious and tells Tom how Juliet had asked him to kill Ben. Though she denies it, Tom orders Juliet to leave the surgery. Side note, the guy who drives the garbage truck that picks up my trash, he looks like Tom. It's so funny every time he passes. Okay. While Ivan releases Danny and Jason, Kate and Sawyer make it to the beach and call Jack to ask for help in getting a boat. Danny and the two others catch up, however, chasing them into the woods and destroying the walkie in the crossfire. Sawyer runs out of ammo, and Kate is about to get shot by Jason when Alex shoots him with her slingshot and motions for Kate and Sawyer to follow her. She brings them to a hole covered by camouflage while their pursuers run past them. Ben wakes and overhears Tom confronting Jack about Juliet's betrayal. Ben asks that Juliet be brought to him, and Tom gets her. Kate, Sawyer, and Alex leave their hiding place. Alex says there is no tunnel to the main island, but that she will take them to the boat if they help her rescue her boyfriend Carl, who is being held prisoner somewhere on the island. Ben congratulates Jack on his ploy and then asks to speak to Juliet alone. Jack and Tom watch from the observation room, but cannot hear what Ben and Juliet discuss. Tom says that they have history. Juliet comes out, tears in her eyes, and asks Jack to finish the surgery. In return, she will help his friends escape. Juliet then goes to the video surveillance room and sees Kate and Sawyer on one of the monitors. She zooms in to find out that they are with Alex. Alex brings Sawyer and Kate to another part of the Hydra compound in the jungle. Another, Aldo, is sitting guard outside reading Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time. And Alex approaches, claiming to have captured Kate and Sawyer. As they argue about her dad not wanting her to be there, Sawyer knocks him over and box him for falling for the old Wookiee prisoner gag, which you probably have no idea what that means.
I don't.
It's from Star Wars. Girl. I don't know how we've stayed friends this long.
Star Wars when I was like 5. I don't. Maybe because we don't have the same interest.
Yeah.
But where it counts, we're right there on the same page.
Okay. All right. You got me.
Kate? Midnight drives. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Kate threatens to shoot Aldo in the knee. She tells Sawyer later that she wasn't bluffing. So he reveals that Carl is at the end of the hall in room 23. Kate knocks him out and they break into the room where Carl is strapped to a chair with an IV in his arm and LED glasses on his face. He is being forced to watch a video with strange flashing images, text, and sounds. Sawyer is momentarily entranced by the video, but Kate snaps him out of it. They remove Carl from his chair, and Sawyer carries him out over his shoulder. This was like straight out of a scene of Clockwork Orange. You've seen that, right?
No.
Oh my God. Okay. It's crazy. Like, I've read the book, I've watched a movie, it's one clusterfuck of a movie. It's disturbing as all hell. But you should probably watch it. It's still a good movie. Don't read the book, just watch a movie. Danny and company find Aldo, just as Juliet catches up with them after monitoring Kate and Sawyer's location. She tells Danny about her new orders to let them leave. But Danny counters that Ben would rather die than let them go. Jack continues the surgery. He asks Tom why they didn't take Ben off the island for surgery. Tom starts to say something about when the sky turned purple, but is interrupted when Jack accidentally snags an artery. The fugitives load Carl onto Alex's small canoe. Sawyer comments on Alex being the boss's daughter. And she confirms this. Danny arrives and is about to kill Sawyer when Juliet appears and kills him, shooting him several times in the chest. Juliet tells them to leave on the boat, but that Alex must stay behind because that's the only way Ben will let Carl live. Alex agrees, saying goodbye to Carl. Juliet gives Kate her walkie-talkie. The surgery is interrupted by Kate on the walkie-talkie informing Jack that they have a boat and are being let go by Juliet. Jack makes her tell the story he told her when they first met. Kate tears up as she recounts how he conquered his fear by counting to 5. The story focuses Jack and he is able to stabilize Ben. He makes Kate promise never to come back for him. And Sawyer and Kate and Carl reluctantly sail away in the canoe as Alex and Juliet watch on. Juliet returns to the station and meets Jack in the observation room. He asks what will happen now that he has removed the tumor for Ben, and Juliet says he'll go back to his cell until they figure out what to do with him. Jack demands to know what Ben said to make Juliet want to save his life, that after all they have put him through, he deserves it. Juliet sadly tells Jack that she has been on this island for 3 years, 2 months, and 28 days, and that Ben told her if she cooperated and he lived, he would finally let her go home. Juliet becomes emotional and leaves the room. And with that, the episode ends.
So that's why she wanted him dead right then and there, before, and they went away for the tumor. He was holding her hostage.
It looks like it.
Okay, that's it in my epiphany. That's all I have to say. We all know that Alex isn't the big kahuna. Oh, but wait. Never mind, I just changed my mind.
What?
Because honestly, the big boss, everyone assumed that they're talking about Ben, but they may be somebody else. they're talking about. And then isn't Alex the other the French lady's daughter? It was like she was already yes. she'd already had her when they got to the island. She wasn't pregnant. So we already know. But at the same time, we don't know who our, we don't know who the big boss is. So the big boss might be from outside world for all we know. And it might be Alex's father. But we have to assume that probably not her father. All right, that's it. I have no thoughts.
Well,
I just went right around in circles.
Juliet, I'm sorry. The episode makes it seem that they're talking about Alex being Ben's daughter.
Even if they can say they were, we mm-hmm. know that's not true.
Why?
Oh, well, actually, like I said, no, because wasn't he born that island? I don't know. Not, I'm,
he,
I
give up. I'm okay. I'm he confused. Said I'm that so he's lived confused. His. That he's been there all his life or something. But, I mean, let's be realistic.
And we assume he's not being...
He doesn't...
We assume that he's just not being...
We don't know how much truth poetic. He tells. You know?
Oh, my head is pounding.
So you think this could be like a love child between Ben and Russell?
No, my fucking idea. Like, it could be...
Like, maybe he came on the ship with them and then, like, reinvented himself. And now he's like, oh, I've been here my whole life.
Ben has been here his whole life. But let's say Ben might not be his real name. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
The person that he's developed himself to be has been the island his whole life. I still don't know. I don't give a fuck because it's confusing the fuck out of me. So I'm going to take it as episode and not okay. think about anything else.
Okay. We almost get to find out what happened when the sky turned purple, except once again, we were interrupted, so we don't know.
Foiled again.
I know. And Juliet shoots Pickett and kills him. Good riddance, because Pickett was annoying as fuck.
He was too emotional. He's too, like, high...
In fairness, his wife was killed. But, like, still, he's just annoying.
If you saw him before, like, his attitude before she was killed was very reactive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could see snippets of him just being, to begin with. So he's just a reactive personality and he's detrimental to the whole clan of people.
We see, I feel like in this episode, we see another side of Juliet and we see another side of Tom even. You know, like every time we've seen Tom, he's like, we're going to have to take the boy. And then it's like, light him up. This is our island and we just let you live here. And now it's like, yeah, I don't like blood and... You know, he's kind of like just much softer, you know, still kind of definitely in an authoritative position, but much softer. You think he's an actor?
I think he's very smart to be like an authoritative position. But at the same time, I think his role is to play a part. Like everyone's role is to play a part.
Mm-hmm.
Like they have like the fucking thing, you know, the stage makeup and props and stuff. Like, that's not something that you bring on an island. That's like, why would you even if you're bringing a little, what's the thing? Like, you have a little getaway resort or a little, or a project. Like, that's not something you bring with you normally unless it's for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like, I feel like the whole reason it's there is nefarious to begin with.
And even Juliet, like,
use word.
We've seen her just so indifferent up to now.
Well, that makes sense. 3 years of being held hostage. You think you're going for one.
From like baking cookies and having book club, but you know, she's just been like very indifferent. And then even at the end, we see her have a little emotion, but and that's not even including what we saw from her flashback and the off-island stuff.
I think she had to harden. She had to toughen up. She had to. We're assuming that the whole not quite in Portland is was really the island. I think we can assume that.
Right.
She's there. He won't let her go home, or they can't go home, or whatever. You know, Ben is woohoo. She had to toughen up. She had to get a thick skin. Like, you find with people when their life is traumatically changed, soft people get harder, hard people get soft. And that's...
So do you really think that that if she has an alliance, that it's still with the others? Being that she just helped them escape... She killed Danny, or do you think that that's all part of her plan or their master plan? You what?
I think she's just trying to get the fuck off this island. And whatever she needs to do, she wants to go home. If that means making a deal with the devil to help the survivors, whatever. I think she just wants to get the fuck off this island. I can see why her plans changed from kill him to, all right, fine, you can live. She's just making plans as the situation changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure she hates them. Like, probably. She hates everybody. She hates the others.
It definitely seems like it. Mm-hmm. We got a flashback from Juliet. The first quote-unquote other to get a flashback. But there are others that we've met before Juliet. We've met Ben. We've met Tom. I mean, we've met Ethan and Goodwin, but they're no longer alive. But do you think there's significance or find it interesting that Juliet got a flashback before, even Ben? I mean, first, Ben is supposed to be a significant player.
I think that not knowing what the fuck is going on with Ben is the point of his role thus far, is a point of the character.
So that's what I was thinking.
Not knowing what's going on with him feeds into the suspense of his role in the show. So it makes sense. Like, you're going to get it. You have to give someone a flashback. And, you know, Juliet is a pivotal character at this point.
Yeah.
And then Ben. It plays a role into it.
At the same time, it's like, we all know that the flashbacks are skewed. I mean, I know I'm talking like if these are real people, but the flashbacks are skewed to show you what they want you to see. I mean, just look at Locke's flashbacks. I mean, you see a man who worked in a box factory. You see a man who was going to go on an adventure on a walkabout. You see a man who lived on a commune. I mean, one thing.
So do you think that these flashbacks aren't real? Are the flashbacks? They're not
real.
No,
I'm just saying,
like, these people are not real. They're like, they're fake memories.
No, but people do the same things. Like, they have their routines. But if you take out one little snippet of a person's life, it's like social media. You know, you only show what you want people to see. So I could only post pictures of me going on vacation, but the percentage of my life that I spend on vacation is minuscule. It doesn't show all the times that I'm sitting on my couch shoving potato chips into my face. I mean... You know, like, and you think, oh, look, she's a world traveler.
I see your point. I see what you're trying to say, but it's a TV show. So I don't think it's...
Well, I know.
I just don't see how it's applicable, because no matter what they show you, it's just going to be a snippet. And I don't think it's... I don't know. I see your point, but I don't know.
Okay. Fair enough.
I think in this particular, it's just too much analyzing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're falling down the rabbit hole.
I am. I'm already down there. I'm trying to get you to come in with me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. My brain. I have a question. Where the fuck is Saeed and the other two and Sun, and like, what the hell what happened to them? I don't remember. It's like 600 episodes ago. I feel like I lost them in my brain.
Yeah.
Did they, like, I remember, last time I remember, they were like, they were at like the part, like the decoy village or whatever.
Well, they
were trying to save them.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
But then they came, remember, they came back.
Okay, see, I didn't remember.
Because,
I don't remember.
I think that that's the assumption anyway, because remember, Saeed is with Locke in the jungle.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So it's because like we're not really died. Like okay. finding out about them, but it's like the assumption is that they're back because we've seen Saeed.
That's right. I forgot about that. See? Okay. Brain fart. Yeah. I'm like, wait, what happened to them? All right.
I have a few more talking points, but I want to do trivia first.
Okie dokie.
Rachel's pregnancy test was made by Widmore Labs. So that there's that name coming up again. Juliet says that she's been on the island for 3 years, 2 months, and 28 days, which means she arrived on September 5th, 2001. This date is within a few months of Desmond's arrival. In Edmund Burke's office, a sailing trophy can be seen. And the bus that hits Edmund can be seen a few seconds before it hits him. As he's walking out of the building, it is stationary at a bus stop to his left. The bus has an ad for Apollo candy bars. Also, it's I don't know if this is trivia because this is like me, but operating on Ben, you've got Dr. Shepherd and Dr. Burke. Also, on another ABC show, Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, I know Shepherd and Burke, but I don't see.
It's just, isn't it just like a little weird coincidence? Like Jack is Dr. Shepherd, Juliet is Dr. Burke.
No.
I don't know. I just found it like kind of weird coincidence. Like on this show, you have a Dr. Shepherd and a Dr. Burke. And on that show, you have a Dr. Shepherd and a Dr. Burke. What?
I don't see.
I just mean the names. I don't mean...
What, Juliet's last name is Burke?
Yeah.
Oh, Juliet is Burke?
Yeah.
I didn't know. That's why I was like, I don't get it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Juliet
I didn't know that her last name was Burke.
Is Burke.
I was like,
mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, now that makes sense. I'm like, I don't get it. I was like, what are you drinking? I want some of it.
So, in an interview... Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse state that there are two Easter eggs in this episode. The first was identified as an anagram. Middelos translates to lost time. So that was the first one.
Cute.
The second one was not identified, but is likely the backward speech found in the Room 23 video. Only fools are enslaved by space, I'm sorry, by time and space. And this is an anagram for bones of lost Nadlers may lay deep in cave. Or bones of Nadlers may lay deep in lost cave. An inner anagram of Nadlers is Landers, people of the Lamb, thus related to Adam and Eve. It's a lot more confusing if you heard it and not read it. But yeah. Basically talking about...
No, I get it. It's just like... I get it. It's just so much... It's like if you're not... If you're not watching it, I don't see how anyone with any kind of life would have gotten that. You know what I mean? If it wasn't mm-hmm. told to you. I just... It's like... I feel like the Easter eggs are something that you would get watching. That's not something you would get watching unless you have absolutely no life. I said what I said, okay? So I just feel like, I was like...
Well, the lost time, the Middelos one, that's not too bad. But the second one was the one that it's like, what
maybe.
The fuck?
What the fuck? So, okay, so a little trivia that... Okay, I was kind of excited about the connection. You mocked uh-huh. me.
I wasn't... was I mocking you?
You were mocking, like, I see you're excited. Okay. I just like connections. So I'm watching the I watched the reboot of MacGyver. Pretty good.
So, oh, yeah, it was.
Last episode, there was one episode. You were mocking me.
No, you was. Bitch. I wasn't mocking you. I was like happy. Shut up.
So last week's episode had the actor Jorge Garcia in it. As we all know, it's Hurley. Now, Hurley, prior to this, played in the reboot of Hawaii Five-0. In this episode of MacGyver, he was actually reprising his character in Hawaii Five-0. All right, you with me now?
I am.
So MacGyver had asked him, hey, have you done any undercover work? So he's like, yeah, I once went undercover in a mental hospital. And I thought it was as funny as shit because, as we know, Hurley was in a mental hospital.
Uh-huh. Yep. See, I didn't know.
So the character Hurley in mental hospital and Lost.
I saw the picture of them together. I didn't know the lines. That's funny.
I was kind of excited. I chuckled at that one. I'm like, oh, this is funny. So I know we said it before that a lot of the actors that were in Lost apparently stayed in Hawaii to do the Hawaii Five-0 reboot. Mm-hmm. Like Terry O'Quinn is in Hawaii Five-0. Hurley. There's like four or five people.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Daniel. What's his name? Yes. They Kim.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But yeah, so it's funny when I was watching TV and I was kind of like laying down with my, like dozing off. So he's like, yeah, I went to cover the mental hospital. I actually laughed out loud at that one. I was like, oh, that's so funny.
See, now you got the connection because of me.
Yes, Lisa, because of you. Okay. I can't deny it. I won't be happy about it, but I'm not going to deny it either.
I know. Can we, I can't believe you've never seen The Clockwork Orange, but can we talk about Room 23?
Okay.
Okay. Carl is being subjected to some kind of psychological conditioning in Room 23. Pictures of Alvar Hanzo and Gerald DeGroote can be seen. And as we know, those are the people behind the whole Dharma initiative. Mm-hmm. A 1921 U.S. coin is seen with the old U.S. model E pluribus unum, from many, one. But in 1956, it was changed to In God We Trust. The coin is shown in the screen with the superimposed words, Everything Changes. When the scene is played backwards, a woman's voice can be heard clearly amongst the flashing images and sounds repeating, only fools are enslaved by time and space. But like, who thinks about this? Like, oh, hey, let's just play this backwards. I don't know. Many slides show close-ups of dolls, fish, and women's eyes. There are close-ups of a picnic table and swings. And those are images that we're going to see later in the show.
I wonder if it had anything to do with Sawyer.
Say that again. You broke up. You wonder if it's like gonna
mesmerize off the bat. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it has anything to do with Sawyer because he was kind of like stuck on stupid instantly. And you normally, I might be incorrect, but I think the type of manipulation doesn't have something you have to like be. Like they kept his eyes open. It's not something that hits mm-hmm. you. It doesn't put you in a trance or anything instantly. So I wonder if some of the images meant something to Sawyer.
That's a really good connection. I mean, I'm not going to confirm if you're right or wrong. I'm just saying that that's a really smart way to connect it.
It's a very good theory that we're not going to talk. We're not going to confirm or deny.
Right. Among the messages shown we can read, "We are the causes of our own suffering," and "God loves you as he loved Jacob." So now we have another mention of Jacob. Love which Jacob. Which brings me,
oh Lord,
to my next connection. This is the second episode where we talk about Jacob. We have, okay, in the Bible, Rachel was the favored wife of Jacob. That was Juliet's sister. And in the Bible, Rachel also had fertility problems. When these frames are shown on screen, the background shows a staircase, which may refer to the biblical story of Jacob's stairway to heaven. I just think it's interesting that you got another reference to Jacob. It's definitely a biblical reference because of the way they wrote the word he. And then off island, you have Rachel with fertility problems. And she just so happened to be shared the same name as Jacob's favorite wife.
Okay.
Okay.
Just like, okay. I just know, as a, in general, if I have to think too hard about any show, it's about like a series of show, it's, I'm noping out.
Well, I think the thing is,
TV shows should keep you interested. They should keep you interested and like, oh, what's going to happen next? Because they keep you going. But if it's just too much, you're like,
but you see, I think
that watches TV.
That's one of the best things about this show, because you can just watch it. You can just watch it and not dive in. But if you want to dive in, there's always something to find. It's like, this is like a pool. Do you want to just float on your raft in the pool and sip a margarita? Sure, you can do that. But do you want to go under the water and see what's there too? Okay, I got one more. Are you ready?
Okay. I'm ready.
Sawyer tells Aldo about the that they use the Wookiee prisoner gag. Aldo is also Rob McElhenney. I don't know if I'm saying his name right. But he's one of the creators and the actors in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. You don't watch that, do you? Oh, such a no. good show. Okay, anyway. When in Star Wars, when they use it to break Princess Leia out, she is being held in detention block AA-23. But when they use it on Lost, they're to break Carl out of room 23. Just coincidence, but, you know, funny.
That's cute.
Yeah.
That's cute.
So not in Portland. I think that's pretty obvious what it refers to. And
not in Portland.
Yeah, definitely not. But that'll about do it for this episode. We have a decision to make.
Okay.
You and I have polled the audience. I have talked to fellow Losties, and I have found a good episode for you to watch if you want to watch Out of Order. If you do.
I don't think so. Honestly, I just think no, because it's going to probably just aggravate me more. Or something like, okay, now I got to wait how many more episodes to figure out what the hell I just saw.
Okay, so I'll tell you this. The episode that I chose, if you do watch it, you will not know any, you really won't know any character on the episode, which is really the reason that I picked it. Because it will truly be like, what the fuck did I just watch?
No, so no. Let's just continue. Okay. Like normal human beings. No, I can't. Because it's like, it's going to, no. It's going to, no.
Okay.
No. Like, if I'm watching a movie, and if I'm like 10 minutes late, I can't watch the movie.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Like, if I come in, even if it's like 10 minutes, I won't. I'm like, yeah. No, I'll try catch it again.
Yeah. So the next episode is Flashes Before Your Eyes.
In order.
Yeah. It's a Desmond episode.
I slayed me.
And
I like Desmond.
Okay, so let me ask you something. Personally, I think that Not in Portland is one of the best episodes in the season. What do you think?
It's the best episode
of the season? No, not the best. One of the best in the season.
But still, that doesn't... I mean, it was a good episode. Doesn't really give me high hopes for the rest of the season, though.
Okay, great. Anyway, so I may or may not think the same about the next one, then.
We have, what, 3.5... Well, we have, what, 3.5 seasons left to finish?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God, shoot me. Okay.
All right. Flashes Before Your Eyes is next. And it's a Desmond episode. And then the rest are... I'll be honest. Some of them I remember offhand and some of them I can't quite remember the specificities. Some of them are okay. And some of them are like... ugh. But, you know, we're getting there. But one at a time, right?
Baby steps.
Baby steps. So, I guess I will meet you back here.
Off my car.
You what? You have to go somewhere?
Same time, same channel.
Yeah.
No, just got. I have to do it in, instead of cleaning off 8 inches in one shot. I've been doing it in shifts.
All right. Well, then I guess I
fucking hate this.
I will see you back here for Flashes Before Your Eyes. So until then, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/sasspod. You can also connect with us on social media or call into our number. All of our contact information is in the show notes, and everything that you do truly helps. You can also rate and review and subscribe to our podcast. And as always, please don't drink and drive. And until next time, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Agnes.
And we are out of here.
Peace. See you later. Bye.